WMFO Medford. Unlike milk, long-distance telephone calls, and library books, there is no due date, tolls, or expiration in the grand hour. Pre-recorded.
Thank you, Digital Henry. Good morning. It's the 15th of September, 2021. My name is Arthur, and this is the Grand Hour here on 91.5 FM and or WMFO.org, Medford Tufts Freeform Radio. I'm going to start the show off with a favorite of the show, Bob Bailey. He's in yours truly, Johnny Dollar. This one is titled The Meek Memorial Matter, with an original air date of the 3rd of March, 1957. Thanks for listening.
From Hollywood, it's time now for...
Johnny Dollar.
Where have you been for the past 20 minutes?
In the shower.
For 20 minutes?
Okay, so I'm a shiny dollar.
So you're...
Who's that?
Max Green at Assured Equity.
Oh, hi, Max. What's on your mind?
87 years ago...
Our fathers brought forth, but that doesn't answer my question.
Johnny, you ever hear of the Meeks?
New England family, stowed away in the Mayflower, speak only to their money?
That's the Meeks.
What about them?
No, not about them. It's about Mariah Meek and Lincoln's Gettysburg Address. She's lost her copy of it.
Well, it shouldn't be hard to find her another one.
That's where you're wrong, Johnny.
Huh?
It would be very hard. Might cost us $100,000.
Bob Bailey, in the exciting adventures of the man with the action-packed expense account. America's fabulous freelance insurance investigator.
Yours truly, Johnny Dollar. Expense account submitted by Special Investigator Johnny Dollar to the Assured Equity and Trust Company, 325 Scott Avenue, Hartford, Connecticut. The following is an account of expenses incurred during my investigation of the Meek Memorial matter. Expense account item one, $1.90. Cab from my apartment to Max Green's office. He was standing in a haze of cigar smoke, ashes on his vest, and a worried look on his face.
Oh, good morning. Good morning, Johnny. Oh, you want a cigar?
Oh, no, thanks.
Then sit up, sir. Excuse me. Listen, Johnny, what do you know about that speech that Lincoln made at Gettysburg?
Well, I had to memorize it in school like every other kid.
All right, you know how many words are in it?
Maybe a couple of hundred. Why?
Wait a minute, it's in this book. Here, it's page 143. Speech is printed here exactly as Mr. Lincoln released it to the newspapers after the Gettysburg Address. You find it?
Yeah, but now what do you...
Okay, total number of words, 268. But the first two drafts of that speech, including the one he read that day, contained only 266 words.
So he padded his part.
That's right. Two more words.
Mm-hmm. How come?
Oh, according to the historians, Lincoln ad-libbed the two additional words at the time he read it. Later on, when he made three new copies of the speech, he included those two words. You with me so far?
Keep going, Max.
Yeah. All right. Right down at the end of it, just before Of the People, By the People, where he said that this nation under God shall have a new birth of freedom, the words under God do not appear in the first two drafts he wrote.
Yeah. Well, this is all very interesting, Max, but I still don't see what it is or what it has to do with me.
Well, Mariah Meek's copy has disappeared.
Oh?
And, Johnny, that copy happens to contain just 266 words.
You mean she owns one of the first two original drafts?
Handwritten by Mr. Lincoln himself while he was on the train riding to Gettysburg.
Wowie.
Yeah. Which is, of course, why we insured it for the full amount it cost her. Which is $100,000 even.
Of course, you made sure it was authentic before you issued the policy.
Oh, naturally.
Well, who'd she buy it from?
An antique dealer down in Richmond, Virginia, a fellow named Jason Penrod.
Uh-huh. Well, where's she been keeping it?
Under glass, in the Meek Memorial.
What's that?
Well, she collects Americana, so she had a museum built to keep it in, and she calls it the Meek Memorial.
Follows?
Follows. Also follows the most expensive item in the collection, the Gettysburg Address, would be the one to disappear.
Oh, you're just an old pessimist, Max. You think somebody lifted it?
What do you think? It walked out by itself.
Okay, okay. So what are you going to do about it?
Well, we're going to run newspaper ads. We're going to offer a $10,000 reward for information leading to its return. If anyone answers it, you let me know where you'll be, and I'll refer them to you.
Good. When was it taken?
The night before last.
Is there any kind of market for something that rare?
Hard to say, Jolly. A hot camera would be easier to peddle.
Sure.
But a good many wealthy people, like Mrs. Meek, they make a hobby of collecting things. You know, antiques, objects of art, etchings.
But whoever took this or buys it from the thief couldn't just let everybody see it.
Well, it wouldn't matter to some people. They take it and put it in a vault and keep it there.
Then what's the point in having it around?
Pride of possession. You got something no other collector could own.
Mm. And of course, it might not have really disappeared at all.
You're thinking of fraud?
$100,000 is a lot of cash. Expense account item 2, $1.90, cab fare back to my apartment. I wasn't particularly intrigued by this assignment. Rare documents, like anything else antique, have always seemed to be just one step from decay. And that sometimes goes for the people who collect such things. Item 3, $16.10, transportation, including a round-trip ticket, Hartford to New Bedford, and cab fare to the Whalers Hotel. There was a convention in town, so I was lucky to get a room. After checking in, I called the Meek residence. Mrs. Meek was expecting me and said she'd have her car pick me up. I had just put down the phone when someone knocked on the door.
You in there?
Depends on what you're looking for.
I'm looking for Mr. Jay.
Jay, did you say? Nobody by that name here.
Oh, yeah. I see. I guess I got the wrong room.
Yeah, well, why don't you ask down at the desk?
Huh? Yeah. Oh, sure. Yeah.
Huh. Funny. Where is it? I cracked the door open again, watched him walk to the stairs. Then I took the elevator down the 8 flights to the lobby. Half an hour later, I was in the back seat of the Meek limousine heading toward the home out on Buzzards Bay. It was a big, sprawling frame building facing on the beach. About 50 yards behind it, closer to the road, was the Meek Memorial Museum. I was starting up the front steps when the door opened.
Mr. Dollar?
That's right.
I'm Paul Meek. I understand you have an appointment with my grandmother.
Right again.
Now come in, please. She's waiting for you upstairs in the sitting room.
Okay, thanks.
Before you go up, I wonder if I could have a few words with you.
Why not?
Stay in here, then. You've never met my grandmother, have you?
No, I haven't had that pleasure.
Some people consider it a dubious one, Mr. Dollar.
Oh.
Mr. Dollar, this is my wife, Janice.
Mrs. Meek.
Hi. How about a drink?
Thanks, not just now.
How about you, old stick in the mud? You want another one?
After a bit, Janice. And if I were you, I wouldn't have any more.
But you're not me, are you?
You will have to excuse my wife, Mr. Dollar. Well, we've both been under a severe strain since moving here. Grandmother is blind, you know.
No, I didn't know.
Her sight began failing about 4 years ago. I'm surprised the insurance agent didn't tell you.
Well, Mr. Green was so concerned over the theft of the Lincoln manuscript, I imagine it slipped his mind.
Mm-hmm. And just how do you intend to locate that manuscript?
I'm not so sure that I can.
It'd be a pity if you couldn't.
It'd be just awful.
It's grandmother's prized possession. She hasn't been herself since it was stolen. And being quite elderly, well, we're all very much concerned.
Oh, my, yes. We're afraid she might die and leave us all that lovely money.
Janice.
It's the truth. You see, Paul and I don't have any money of our own, Mr. Dollar. We'll never have any until she does die. Instead of giving it to us now while we're young, you know what she does with it? Spends it buying junk for that soy old museum.
Now, look.
That's gratitude, isn't it? I bathe her, feed her, rub her feet, and do all her dirty work.
Janice, you've said quite enough. Mr. Dollar isn't interested in our personal problems.
Oh, stick in the mud. All right. I'll be in the den if you want me. And that's the funniest thing I've said all day. If you want me.
I'm sorry. She doesn't mean half of what she says. Oh, that's grandmother's signal.
Then hadn't we better go up?
Yes. Yes, we'd better.
We went up the broad staircase, through a hall, and into a bright, sunny room. Wrapped in an old kimono and shawl, Martha Meek sat in an invalid chair, facing the ocean. Paul introduced us, then sat down quietly near the door.
Paul?
Paul, I know you're there. Now answer me.
Yes, Grandmother.
You go on downstairs. I want to talk with Mr. Dollar in private.
Whatever you say.
And close that door. Don't mind my back, Mr. Dollar. I couldn't see you if I looked into your face. Now then, when are you going to arrest that crook and bring my Lincoln speech back to me?
Well, I'm going to need a lot of help and information, Mrs. Meek.
Mm-hmm. What kind of information?
Mostly about the museum.
Like what?
Well, do you know who was in there the night the manuscript disappeared?
Certainly. That dirty robber was.
Anyone else?
Well, old Pete's always there. Supposed to be guarding the place, but he didn't do a very good job the other night. Got himself slugged.
Does he live on the grounds?
Yes. I brought him over from Naples 10 years ago. He was my guide in Italy. Showed me around so nice, I decided to bring him back.
Tell me, is the memorial open to the public?
It was going to be. I intended it to be once, but when my eyes... No, Mr. Dollar, I keep it locked most of the time.
Uh-huh. And who discovered the manuscript was missing?
Pete did, I guess. At least when he recovered, he ran yelling bloody murder up here to the house. Everybody went down to see what had happened. Everybody but me. They left me all to myself.
Were there any strangers here in the house that night, Mrs. Meek? Anyone beside the servants and your grandson and his wife?
One person, but he's no stranger.
Who's that?
Jason Penrod from Richmond. He's an art dealer. We were discussing some business.
May I, ask what kind of business?
It has nothing to do with you or the people you work for.
Sorry. Where can I find Mr. Penrod?
He's staying here now. If he isn't in his room, then he's most likely out in the memorial. Now, that's enough questions. You, give me a cigarette.
Ma'am?
What's the matter, you deaf? Give me a cigarette before Paul with that snoopy wife of his comes prowling around.
All right, sure.
Light me.
Yeah.
Well, you want any more information? Pete's the one to talk to.
All right, thanks. But what about your son and daughter-in-law? Were they inside the house at the time of the robbery?
You don't suspect them, do you?
Right now, I suspect everybody, Mrs. Meek.
Even me?
Yes, ma'am. Even you.
Well, bless you, boy.
I found Pete Vesuvio trimming the shrubbery just outside the memorial building. He seemed quite willing to talk to me.
How you say what happened to me, mister? I'm hit out?
Knocked out, Pete.
Ah, si, senor. And because of this, I do not see anything.
Nothing at all, huh?
Please, mister, do not use the insult. I am American citizen, first papers. And because of the kindness of my patron, I will soon be second papers. I know by heart the Constitution, United States, Gettysburg Address, pledge allegiance to my flag.
Yeah.
You know how I know that these things which help me be citizen? Because of my lady, she's letting me work in a place where great papers are for me to read. Because of her, I would not hide anything, mister.
Okay, Pete, okay. I'm convinced.
But I'm sorry I cannot help you, mister.
Well, it's not your fault.
Hey, you like to hear me say Gettysburg Address.
Well,
do it very good. Learn it right from President's own writing.
Some other time, Pete. Right now, I have to find Mr. Penrod.
Oh, he's inside, mister. Counting the treasures. All of the beautiful things a milady can no longer see. You'll find him in Section L, senor.
I found the small, neat-appearing art dealer just where Pete had said he'd be, peering into a glass case crowded with Derringer pistols. He had a notebook under his arm and seemed to be making some sort of inventory.
Oh, dear. You gave me quite a fright, sir.
Oh, I'm sorry. Well, I wish I could concentrate like that.
Oh, well, there's nothing more interesting to me than these fine old pistol things. What history they must have, Mr.
Dollar. Johnny Dollar.
Oh, yes, the insurance investigator. Paul told me you were wondering about the place. I suppose you'd like to ask me some questions, hmm?
If you don't mind.
Oh, no, goodness, no.
I understand you were with Mrs. Meek the night of the robbery.
That is correct, sir. We heard the shouting. We ran out here just as fast as we could. I was the one who discovered the manuscript was missing.
You have any idea how the thief got in here?
No, sir, no. Unless someone forgot to lock the front door, or unless he had a key.
Well, has Mrs. Meek given out many of the keys?
Well, in my opinion, too many. Even I have one.
What about Paul Meek and his wife?
No, I don't think so. Well, they really aren't interested in the museum at all, Mr. Dollar.
Oh. Mr. Penrod, I understand you're quite an authority on antique art and things like that.
Well, I...
Isn't taking inventory a little beneath your position?
Well, I suppose it is, Mr. Dollar. Last week when I received dear Mariah's wire asking me to do it, I simply couldn't refuse. She's been such a good customer of mine, Willie.
Yes. You have any idea who might have wanted the Lincoln manuscript?
Well, I know several persons who'd love to have it. You'd give most anything, but I don't know anyone with the nerve to break in here and take it by force.
You remember where Paul Meek and his wife were when you heard Pete shouting?
They were right in here when I arrived.
I see. Well, thanks for... Oh, just one more thing.
Oh, yes?
If you'd stolen the manuscript...
Mr. Darlow...
A hypothetical question, Mr. Penrod. But if you had, and you wanted to sell it at a good price with the least danger of being caught, how would you go about it?
Well, I take it abroad, of course. I'd put it on the open market over there.
Huh. You aren't planning on going abroad soon, are you, Mr. Penrod?
Oh, gracious, no.
You know anyone who is? Anyone who,
Well, didn't Paul and Janice tell you? They're flying to Paris Wednesday night.
I left the memorial and walked back to the house. The Meeks were in the study, engaged in their favorite pastime. When I told them what the art dealer had said, Paul set down his glass long enough to confirm the fact that they did have reservations and insisted that he had a logical explanation for not having told me of those plans earlier.
Very logical explanation, Mr. Dollar.
Let me handle this, Janice, please.
Sure. Drink, Johnny?
No, first I want to hear that explanation, if you don't mind, Paul.
Of course I don't mind. Janice and me were fed up.
Why didn't you tell me about the plane reservations?
Well, why should I have? I'm not even sure I'm going to use them.
Oh?
Grandmother's upset enough over losing that manuscript. Something else might... Well, anyhow, if the manuscript doesn't turn up within 48 hours, we're canceling our trip.
Oh, no, please.
Sorry, Janice, but that's the way it's got to be.
She did it.
What do you mean?
It's an act, don't you see? Jason Penrod told her we were going to leave, so she had him hide the manuscript. And now this thing about her being so upset and having such a weak heart. It's an act to keep her precious darling boy tied to her apron strings.
I don't believe that.
Well, just wait. You will.
Anything else, Dollar?
What does a trip to Paris cost, Paul?
Well, it's not inexpensive.
Your wife was complaining about being so broke.
Haven't you ever heard of flying now and paying later?
We have friends in Paris, Dollar. It won't cost as much to live once we get there. And we'll worry about paying for our ticket when we get back.
Any other questions, Mr. Snooper?
Yeah. Later. It was after 7 when I finally got back to my hotel room. I ordered a drink and tried to make some kind of sense out of the information I'd gathered during the day. But it all added up to 0. I called Hartford and asked Max Green to look into the Meek finances. Then I dressed for dinner. I was about to go downstairs when the phone rang. Johnny Dollar.
Mr. Dollar, I was told to call you.
Yeah?
It's about the ad.
The ad?
In tonight's paper about something missing from a certain memorial.
Go on.
Well, I called Hartford Collect. They said to call you.
Yeah, that's right. Who is this?
My name's not important, Dollar, but that 10 grand reward is.
You think you can earn it?
You meet me tonight, you'll see.
Where?
In the alley behind the Bourne Whaling Museum. Be there at 9:30 and be alone. You got it?
Yeah, I got it. Expense account item 4, 85 cents cab fare from my hotel to the Bourne Whaling Museum. I don't like wandering around dark alleys at night, alone in a strange town. It isn't the best way to stay alive. But at 9:29, I passed the old whaling museum and started down the alley. It was dark, no moon, and it was very quiet. I was about 20 yards in from the street when I saw him, curled up in a ball like he had a stomach ache. Only he didn't. Because somebody had made him very dead. I struck a match and turned him over. I'd only seen him once before, but I didn't have any trouble remembering where it had been. Right after I'd checked in, he'd knocked on my hotel room door. By mistake. At least that's what he'd said. After giving a statement to the local police who identified him, I went back to my hotel.
Evening, Mr. Dollar.
Yeah, say, look, I know it's probably against all your rules, but who had my room just before I checked in?
Oh, I couldn't disclose that information, sir. Sorry.
Oh, well, so am I. It'd mean a lot for me to know. Maybe even $5 worth.
Well, I... well, sir, if it's that important... Thank you. Now, let's see here. Yes, here it is. Can you read his signature, Mr. Dollar?
Yeah, thanks. Just fine. The name I'd seen scrawled on the hotel register wasn't important now. At least not without something more to back it up. There was no law against checking out of a hotel, but there was a law against murder, if it could be proven. And that would be hard to do without finding a motive. So I went back to the Meek house to look for it. I paid off the taxi, that's item 5, and started up the front steps.
Oh, hi, Johnny. I thought it might be you.
That's so?
Mm-hmm. I hope you aren't mad at me for the things I said today.
No, not at all.
I've been a very bad girl. But everything's going to be all right now.
It is.
Mm-hmm. Or haven't you heard?
Heard what?
About dear old grandmother. She's had a real bad stroke. Isn't expected to live.
You aren't a bit sorry, are you?
Would you be, if you were me?
Dollar, you mind coming up here?
No, not a bit, Paul.
I'm trying to reach you at your hotel. Thank goodness you've come here. Did Janice tell you?
Yeah. How is she?
Bad. Doctor's given up. Says it's only a matter of hours. She told me to send for you, Mr. Dollar.
Oh?
I don't know why. I've never been able to figure out a lot of things she did.
All right, where is she?
In there. Old Pete's with her, but go on in.
Thanks.
We take increased devotion to that cause for which they here gave the last...
Who is it?
Oh, it's Mr. Dollar, my lady.
Hello, Mrs. Meek.
Oh, thank you for coming, Mr. Dollar.
I go now.
No, wait. Mr. Dollar, you have a moment, haven't you?
Of course.
I promised Pete the last time I visited the museum. I promised I'd let him recite some of the things he's learned while working there. Haven't been able to keep that promise till now. Go on, Pete, please.
Yes, my lady. They here gave the last full measure of devotion. That we here highly resolve that these dead shall not have died in vain. That this nation under God shall have a new birth of freedom. And that the government of the people, by the people, for the people, shall not perish from the earth.
Thank you. That was wonderful.
Thank you, my lady. Now I go.
Well, Mr. Dollar, I have a confession to make to you.
Yes?
I lied to you.
Oh, I'm sure it wasn't a very big lie, Mrs. Meek.
Oh, but it was. I told you the business Mr. Penrod and I were discussing the night of the burglary.
Yes?
I told you it had nothing to do with you or the people you work for, remember?
Yes, ma'am.
Well, that was a lie. I'm broke, Mr. Dollar. All I have left in the world is this house and the things in the memorial.
I see.
That's why I sent for Jason Penrod. He purchased most of my treasures for me. He's evaluating them now, so Paul and Janice will know what they're worth when they go to sell them. Which they'll do immediately.
Mrs. Meek, don't you think you should try to rest now?
Will you give me a cigarette?
No, ma'am. Sorry. And you must rest.
There isn't much else to do, is there? Good night, Mr. Dollar.
Outside in the hall, Paul and Janice Meek were talking quietly to Jason Penrod. Off in the corner, standing with his back to the others, was Pete Vesuvio.
Mr. Dollar, is she...
She's resting quietly.
Oh, Dio grazie.
Why did you lie to me, Pete?
What? I never lied to nobody. Who say I did?
I say you did.
You're crazy, mister. What lie I tell you?
You said you learned the Gettysburg Address right from Mr. Lincoln's own writing in the museum.
That's no lie. What's the matter? You don't believe that, mister?
I believe you, Pete.
but I just had to be sure. Come on, let's join the others, shall we?
Well, good evening, Mr. Dollar.
Mr. Penrod.
Tell you any of the family secrets, Johnny?
Not too many.
You learn anything in there you didn't know before?
Yeah. I know which one of you stole the Lincoln manuscript.
One of us?
Why, you're crazy, Dollar. We were all in the house at the time it happened.
That's right. But one of you hired a little man named Leo Jones to do your dirty work. Jones called me earlier this evening. He was going to tell me which one of you it was. Evidently, he didn't like the deal he was getting. What was he doing, Penrod, trying to blackmail you?
What are you talking about? I don't know any Leo Jones.
Then why did he come around to my hotel room this morning? The same room you just checked out of.
Well, that doesn't mean a thing. I imagine several persons have been to that room today.
Sure, but they're still alive. Now, let's get to the phony Lincoln manuscript.
Phony manuscript?
It wasn't phony, Mr. Dollar.
Wasn't it? Well, you correct me if I'm wrong, Penrod. After Mrs. Meek purchased one of the first two drafts of Mr. Lincoln's Gettysburg Address, she started losing her sight. When she closed the museum to the public, you saw a chance to make yourself another $100,000 sale. So you switched copies of the manuscript, replacing that draft with one containing the words, "Under God," which isn't worth anything close to $100,000.
What do you mean, Dollar?
All right, let me quote. "That this nation, under God, shall have a new birth of freedom," and so on.
What?
The phrase, "under God," was not in the manuscript he sold your grandmother. But it was in the copy old Pete has been studying in the museum. Right, Mr. Penrod?
All of you, stay right where you are. You get what Jones got.
Mr. Dollar.
He won't go far, Pete.
But I am the guard. The lady will want me to stop him.
Pete, come back here.
Keep away from me.
Pete!
Come on.
Oh.
You tell the lady I am a better guard now. Much better. See, senor?
Yes, Pete.
I did good.
You did fine. Pete Vesuvio will live to apply for his second papers. And in time, probably open a spaghetti joint in New Bedford. Penrod will be tried for murder. As yet, he hasn't disclosed the name of the person who purchased the stolen manuscript. But in time, I'm sure he will. As for the Meeks, well, Mariah passed on later that night. But as she said, there was nothing left for her but to rest. Expense account total, including hotel and numerous incidentals, $98.30. Yours truly, Johnny Dollar.
If a natural disaster comes knocking, how prepared is your family? You can't just close the door on earthquakes, floods, or hurricanes and hope they go away. That's why it's important to make a plan now. Ready.gov/plan has the tools and tips you need to prepare your family for an emergency. So if disaster shows up at your doorstep, you'll be ready. Visit ready.gov/plan and make a plan today. Brought to you by FEMA and the Ad Council.
Thank you, lads, and thank you, Ad Council. This is the Grand Hour here on 91.5 FM and or WMFO.org, Medford Tufts Freeform Radio, although I might have to start playing some more COVID or mask up PSAs here the way things are going in the near future. We heard Bob Bailey and yours truly, Johnny Dollar, at the top of the hour. That was titled The Meek Memorial Matter, with an original air date of the 3rd of March, 1957. I have found some other shows other than Let George Do It that Bob Bailey was featured or starred in. I'm going to be playing those probably. We'll throw them in there in the next couple of weeks. But now we'll close out the rest of the show with Gunsmoke. This one's titled Overland Express. Good to go back home. with an original air date of the 31st of October, 1952. Thanks for listening.
City and in the territory on west, there's just one way to handle the killers and the spoilers, and that's with a U.S. Marshal and the smell of gun smoke. Gunsmoke, starring William Conrad. The transcribed story of the violence that moved west with young America. The story of a man who moved with it. Matt Dillon, United States Marshal.
A stranger named Joe Beaudry killed a man in Dodge and then got on his horse and rode 90 miles northwest. He made it across the Smoky Hill River before his horse played out and fell behind a small knoll. Beaudry put a knife in him and settled on to wait. Half hour later, he shot my horse out from under me and crippled Chester's with a slug in the shoulder. And then he gave up. He just threw down his guns and walked toward us across the prairie. His hands in the air.
You think it's a trick, Mr. Dillon?
I don't know, Chester, but if he makes a move, I'll kill him.
Yes, sir.
That's far enough, Beaudry. Now turn around.
I ain't armed, Marshal.
No. You know, I'm curious, Beaudry. Why didn't you shoot it out?
I don't want to kill anybody, Marshal.
You killed a man in Dodge.
He went for his gun. I had to.
Some of the witnesses say he didn't.
Oh, sure. Friends of his. I heard him. That's why I lit out.
Man looks guilty when he runs. You should have stayed and faced it.
Now, what
there.
Kind of shake could I get in a strange town, Marshal? Everybody be against me.
The law protects you if you're innocent. You'll have to stand trial now anyway.
Well, maybe I made a mistake, but I'm still alive.
Yeah, and a long way from Dodge.
Say, by gracious, that's right. How are we going to get back, Mr. Dillon?
Well, we crossed the Overland Express route about 5 miles back. We just walked to the road and wait for a stage, I guess.
Yeah, but the stage don't go up to Dodge from here, sir.
Well, we'll take it into Fort Donner. Maybe the Army will lend us some horses there and we can turn them back at Fort Dodge.
Marshal.
Yeah.
Well, I know you don't owe me no favors, Marshal, but I never been arrested before. I'd be kind of ashamed in front of everybody on stage.
Well, that's tough, Beaudry. What do you expect me to do?
Only a little thing, Marshal, won't make any difference to you. Just don't let them know that you're taking me in, is all.
All right, Beaudry, I guess it doesn't matter.
Thanks.
I'm not wearing a badge anyway. But you make one move and I'll hogtie you and you'll ride on the roof. Or you'll be dead.
Well, it's a deal, Marshal.
You'll get a fair trial, Beaudry. If you're innocent, you'll go free.
Well, if it is a fair trial, I'm going back to California. I don't know why I ever left it.
You come from California?
Yeah. Hey, Marshal, look, is it all right if I lug my saddle back with me?
Yeah, sure. We're not leaving ours. Chester, I'll go with Beaudry and get his guns.
Yes, Mr. Dillon. I sure do wish you'd stop closer to the stage road, though, Beaudry. 5 miles is a long way packing a saddle.
Go take care of your horse, Chester. Let's get out of here.
Yes, sir. It's a doggone shame, though. That was a mighty good horse.
Come on, Beaudry.
I sure hope the stage hasn't gone by already, Mr. Dillon.
Why don't you get off your back and look down the road, Chester?
Well, I declare. Looky, Andre, it's a-coming. And it's painted bright red, too, Mr. Dillon.
Hey, what if they don't stop for us, Marshal?
Road agents don't usually carry their saddles. The driver will notice that if he's awake.
Driving a six-horse hitch ought to keep him awake.
Yeah, but not sober.
It's his shotgun the messenger's holding.
He doesn't need it. We want a ride, that's all.
Where's your horses?
Marshal, please, you remember what you said.
We lost them.
You don't look like greenhorns to me.
It can happen to anyone.
That's cool. The one in the middle ain't even armed. Pick him up, Hank.
All right, Berryman, it's your treasure box. How far are you going?
Fort Downer.
It's about 60 miles to Fort Downer. You're crowding us. That'll be 15 cents a mile.
15 cents. How much is that, Mr. Dillon?
About $9, Chester.
$9 a piece, that is, and payable right here.
All right. It's high, but I can't argue with you now. Here you are. 20, 5, 6, 7.
All right, mister. Get in. I don't know how the passengers are going to like this, though.
You got room for a couple more in here?
Anybody can't keep his horse or to walk home.
There's room for two, maybe, but not three.
Oh?
Take a look for yourself, mister.
Yeah, I guess you're right. Chester?
Oh, now, sir, I can't...
I don't want Beaudry on top. You'll have to get up there, Chester.
Well, I guess you're right, sir.
But I think you fellows ought to charge us less if I can't ride inside.
The Overland stage guarantees a ride, mister. Comfort's the passenger's problem.
Get in, Beaudry.
Yeah.
Now get fixed somehow. You've held us up long enough.
Give me a fix.
You don't look like a judge, mister.
I'm not a judge.
Well, you must be important somehow. We order these men around, and that fellow on top there calls you sir.
Dillon?
Well, let's just say that I'm sort of the boss of this outfit, mister.
What'd you say your name was?
I didn't say. It happens to be Dillon.
Well, I'm Zimmer. Old man here called himself Gant.
My name is Gant, and I ain't ashamed of it. I don't give a long hoot what any of you call yourselves.
Gant's kind of crusty, but he's sober. That's more than I can say for the other two here. They only wake up long enough to pull on that jug they got and get drunk enough to go back to sleep.
Now, that's not a bad way to travel if your stomach can stand it, I guess.
No, I ain't good myself if I was younger.
What business you in, Dillon?
You ask too many questions, Jimmy. You ain't got no manners.
Nobody's asking you, old man.
Good, good. Then I don't have to listen to your gobbling.
Now, listen here, Gant. Any more out of you, and I'll tear you
up. You can't spook me. I'm too old. Yeah. 85, mister. Would you believe it?
No, sir, I wouldn't. That's mighty old. You sure don't look it.
I knew Meriwether Lewis, mister. Met him in St. Louis when he and Clark come back from the Pacific.
Now who's doing all the talking?
Leave him be, Zimmer. There's no harm in passing the time.
Hey, look, mister. You may be the boss of these other fellas, but you don't run me.
Nobody's trying to run you. Just take it easy.
Don't pay him no mind, Dillon. He's just nervous about something.
What are you driving at, old man?
We'll be in Monument Station about an hour, Dillon. Spend the night there. Hope the chow's improved. Last time I was there, all I had was fat pork. One pastor says, I never eat fat pork. So the cook told him, well, then just help yourself to the mustard.
Monument Station was a long, low hut made of sun-dried, mud-colored bricks with a flat roof, thatched and then sodded. The one building served as an eating room in the daytime and a bunkhouse at night. There wasn't much air inside, and after dinner, fat pork and mustard, Chester, Beaudry, and I went out to the corral for a smoke.
My gracious alive, I hate to think of sleeping in there. All those men, why, a fella could suffocate. And I'll bet that stock tender hasn't washed himself since he left home.
He said he washed his blankets anyways, just this morning.
Yeah, sure. You know how? He spreads it on an anthill for a couple of hours.
Oh, well, that's settled it. I'm sleeping outside.
All right, Chester. We just don't get too cozy. Half the night you're standing guard over Beaudry here. I'll watch him the other half.
Well, I'm not going to run away, Marshal.
You ran once, Beaudry.
All right, I'll tell you something, and maybe you'll trust me a little then.
Tell me what?
Would you like to know who Zimmer is?
Zimmer, he that real testy fella, I don't like him at all. He's always on the prod about something or other.
Wait a minute, Chester. Wait a minute. What about Zimmer, Beaudry?
His real name is Chess Rhine.
So?
Well, at least that's the name was under his picture.
Well, where was his picture, Beaudry?
Well, in California, tacked onto a pole.
Go on.
Well, I think the reward was $500. Of course, I ain't certain.
You sure it was his picture?
Yeah, Marshal, I'm sure. Heard a lot of talk about him in Sacramento just before I left.
What kind of talk?
Well, like one time he rode in a stagecoach as a passenger, and he was peaceful enough until some fellows on horses, they stopped that stage in a canyon somewhere, and then this here Chess Ryan, he pulled a gun on the other passengers, and he disarmed them whilst the boys outside unloaded the treasure box. They had an extra saddle horse along, and Ryan, he rode off with them. That's the way I heard it.
Seems to me he went to a lot of trouble.
Sometimes the passengers give road agents as much fight as the driver and messenger, Chester. They feel safe because they're inside.
Yeah, and that's what Chess Rhine figured. What, are you going to arrest him, Marshal?
I can't arrest a man without cause, Beaudry. You may be telling the truth, but I don't know that for sure. I can check on Zimmer when we get to Fort Donner, but I can doodle Linz, keep an eye on him.
Well, this stage will be robbed long before it gets to Fort Donner, Marshal.
Yeah, maybe, but not without a fight. Thanks for telling me, Beaudry, and for your sake, I hope it's the truth. If it isn't, you're going to be in more trouble than you are now. All right, keep an eye on him, Chester. I'll be back in a few minutes.
Yes, sir.
Berryman?
Yeah?
Out here a minute, will you?
What's up, mister?
I want to talk to you, that's all. Alone. Come on outside, huh?
Be right back, Hank. Save some of that whiskey for me.
Right, Barry.
What's on your mind, mister?
How long you been an express messenger, Berryman?
2 years. Not that it's any business of yours.
You run into any trouble in that time?
Some. Why?
I just want to know if you can handle yourself, that's all.
You want to find out?
Look, Berryman, you know my name. It's Dillon. I'm Matt Dillon. I'm the U.S. Marshal out of Dodge.
Dillon. Dillon. Yeah, I think I remember seeing you there.
Good. Now tell me this. You carrying much in that treasure box of yours?
The messenger who brought it as far as Pond Creek said it was $50,000, unsigned currency, mostly.
Mm-hmm.
Something up, Marshal?
Well, maybe. Tell me, what's the best place for a holdup between here and Fort Donner?
Well, Willow Bend, I expect. Man on a horse could keep hidden there till we were right on top of him.
All right, tell the driver to whip those horses through Willow Bend as fast as they'll go. Chester will be on the roof to help you, and I'll sort of organize the passengers inside.
Well, now if there's going to be a holdup, Marshal, you
well,
should...
Well, I don't know, but we'll play it safe. And, by the way, Berryman, don't let on inside there about this, huh? Or, who I am. All right?
Okay, Marshal.
Thank you. Good night, Berryman.
Night, Marshal.
Oh, Marshal.
Yeah?
We got a jug of station whiskey inside if you want a drink.
I don't think it'd do much good. I've heard of that stuff freezing solid on a cold night.
We will return for the second act of Gunsmoke in just a moment. But first, backing up the great CBS radio news team election night will be UNIVAC, the new electric brain operating for the first time to bring you faster, more accurate, more complete election night totals. November 4th, starting at 8 p.m. New York time, CBS radio reports the election returns from coast to coast. Make CBS radio your election headquarters to hear the trends, the color, and the mounting tide of results reported by Edward R. Murrow, Lowell Thomas, and the rest of the same great CBS radio team that made convention reporting history earlier this year. Now, the second act of Gunsmoke.
next morning, just after sunup, the stage left Monument Station. It was 10 miles to Willow Bend and 12 miles to the next change of horses at a small swing station run by a lone stock tender. Zimmer, or Chess Ryan, if that's who he was, seemed nervous. Too nervous for an experienced road agent, but maybe he had figured me for what I was, and that gave him the jumps. Anyway, I sat next to him so I could handle him faster if and when the time came. We drove at an easy pace until we neared the bend. Then the driver popped his whip over the teams and they began to run hard. But suddenly he was pulling them in and breaking at the same time. One move by Zimmer at that point and I'd have killed or crippled him.
What are we stopping here for?
Hey, driver! What's that?
Wheel's been dragging. Couldn't you feel it, Paul?
All right, everybody out.
Well, what's the idea? Driver, what's wrong?
A wheel's stuck. Can't pull it off with you in there. Come on, hurry it up.
Baudry. Huh? Get over there by Chester.
Well, don't you worry about me. You keep an eye on Reeve.
Go on now.
Come on.
What do you think, Dillon?
Now, they'd have jumped us by now, Berryman, while everybody was still inside. But keep your head up anyway. You watch the other side of the coach. I'll stay here.
Okay.
What do you mean it wasn't greased? Why not?
It's sizzling hot. We have to cool before we can take it off. That drunken fool at Monument didn't grease this one, that's all. Take a bullwhip to him when I get back there.
Well, you can grease it now, can't you?
I could, mister, if I had any grease.
Well, you mean you haven't got any?
Not unless I render you down and make some. Now, get out of my way.
Well, any more of that and I'll...
All right, forget it. What are we going to do?
How about grass, driver?
Hey, that's an idea.
Wrap it around the spindle and go till it wears out. It won't last long, but we can keep putting it on till we get to the next station.
We'll be all day stopping every half mile. Why don't you greenhorns ask a real man how to fix it?
All right, Pop. How are we going to fix it?
Cheese.
Cheese?
Yes, cheese. It worked fine, too.
Yeah, it might at that.
I suppose you brought some cheese along just in case, Pop, huh?
I brought it along to eat. Garen. Well, I'll let you have it. It's in my carpet bag.
Old Gant's cheese worked fine, and we left Willow Bend without more trouble. I began to figure Beaudry for a liar, but he just sat there, staring out at the prairie, and said nothing. A few miles further on, as we approached the swing station, I heard a shot from the messenger, and then Beaudry pointed ahead. And I leaned out to take a look. The station was a small one-room adobe hut with the usual corral at the rear, but there wasn't a horse in sight. And out of the two windows facing us poured thin streams of white smoke. As the stage pulled to a stop, I saw two arrows embedded in the half-open door.
Come on, Chester. Look at them arrows.
Now, wait a minute. Let me take a look in there.
Let's all take a look, Zimmer.
Where's the stock tender? They kill him?
They tried to fire the place, but it just smoldered.
Who are those two men?
I don't know. But this one's still alive.
Well, that's the stock tender. But who are those two?
Never mind them. They're dead.
Scalp. Indian sure must have surprised him. Sneaked right up.
All right, Berryman. Let's get the stock tender out of this smoke. Take his head there.
Yeah. They scalped him, too. And he ain't even dead.
Never mind that. Just pick him up easy. It's all right, fella. Stage is here.
Indians, Comanches, they scalped me. Never even heard of them.
Ask him who those other men were. What were they doing here?
Leave him be. The man's dying.
Water. Give me a drink.
Chester, get the water bag.
Yes, sir. Can't you let the man alone, Dillon?
Scalped three men and stole horses. That's Comanches for you.
Here's the water, sir.
Oh, thanks. Here, fella. Here now. Take a drink. There we go.
Road agents. Those two. They held me up. They said they'd hide till the horses were unhitched. And then hold up the stage. Had a partner on the stage to keep the passengers out of it.
What was his name? Their partner, I mean.
Put my head down, mister. It's bubbling over.
The stock tender's eyes clouded up and went blank as I lay his head back. And then there was a scuffle behind me, and before anybody could move, Zimmer grabbed Gant, and using him as a shield, he walked backward toward the stage. The old man stopped struggling when he felt Zimmer's gun in his back, and the rest of us just stood there watching, helpless.
First man draws a gun, Gant'll die.
You gave yourself away, Chess Ryan.
Take it easy, man. Take it easy. This fool's nervous.
Shut up. You, driver. Lead those teams down the road a piece, and then come back here. Yan and I will take the stage alone. Come on!
You better do what he says, driver. He's scared enough to shoot.
Mm-hmm. Yes, I better.
Come on. What are you stopping for? Take him 50 yards down there.
Can't do it. That wheel's froze up again. He ain't going anywhere at that stage.
Might as well give up right now, young fool.
I never did like you, Gant.
Ryan, listen to me. You've made your play and you've lost. If you give up now, the charges will be attempted robbery. If you don't, they'll probably turn into murder.
Who are you anyway, mister?
I'm a U.S. Marshal.
Well, you're not arresting nobody. Not unless you want Gant dead. You make a move and his blood will be on your hands, Marshal.
You can't hold him there forever, Ryan. The stage going west passes through sometime today. What'll you do then?
He's right. That stage passes this station about noon. I drive it myself half the time.
I'll think of something. First, I want all you men to unload your weapons. Line up and throw them in a pile there. One at a time. Would you even start to try anything and I'll blow a hole in the old man.
You think you would, Mr. Dillon?
He's so nervous now, it's a wonder he doesn't do it by accident, Chester.
I get going, don't stand there. One at a time now. And use two fingers to do it.
All right, man, you better do as he says.
Now?
Go ahead. Easy. All right, next man.
Beaudry.
Yeah?
You're the only man who might stop this.
How?
Pretend to join him.
You trust me that much?
I have to.
Okay, Marshal.
All right, easy now. Two fingers. All right, next man.
Ryan.
Hold it right there, Poultry.
Well, I'm not armed, Ryan. Look. But you know why?
Too yellow, maybe.
Oh, the Marshal's got my gun. I'm under arrest.
He's taking you in, is that it?
He was, till I woke up just now. I killed a man in Dodge, Ryan. They want to hang me for it.
Now, Beaudry, we told you you'd get a fair trial.
Chester,
and what's more...
shut up.
Yes, sir.
Well, look, you haven't got much chance alone, Ryan. But you and me, we can disarm these men, throw away their guns, and ride off on those horses without the coach.
You do that, Beaudry, and I'll quit my job and run you down if I have to chase you all the way to Oregon. I couldn't show up in Dodge after this anyway.
Well, I'll be watching for you, Marshal. It beats hanging. Well, how about it, Ryan?
Make a fool out of Dillon, huh? I like that. I pick up a gun, Beaudry, and get over here.
I'm warning you, Beaudry.
Sorry. I figure I'll live longer this way, Marshal.
Yeah. You hold the old man, Beaudry. I want a free hand.
Yeah. I'll kill Gant quicker than Ryan would. Any of you men try anything?
You heard him? Now, let's get this over with. Fast.
Ryan, I want to tell you something.
That's far enough, Marshal. All that...
that gun in your hand, Ryan, you better keep it on me. You even glance at Beaudry, and I'll draw and kill you.
What are you talking about?
You shoot me and Beaudry will kill you from behind.
What?
That's right, Rhine. Jack, you walk back over towards the hut so he can see I let you go.
He tricked you, too. But I can still kill you, Marshal.
Yeah, that's right, Rhine. You can still kill me. But I'm paid to die. I settled that in my mind when I took this job. It's only a matter of time. But what about you, Rhine? You ready to die?
You can't do this.
I'm doing it, Rhine. I'm doing it now. I'm going to walk right up to you, and you're going to give me that gun.
Stop, Marshal.
Don't. Your spine if you shoot, Rhine.
Let me have the gun, Rhine.
Easy,
no. Rhine. Now!
Did he hit you, Mr. Dillon?
No, he waited a second too long.
Worked, Marshal. Oh, you worked.
Yeah. Yeah, you did fine, Beaudry. I'm going to remember it.
Yeah.
Now, give me back that gun.
You still going to take me in?
Of course.
No, that don't seem fair, Dillon.
I'm only a marshal, Beaudry, not a judge.
Oh. I'm not sure I wouldn't rather die right here.
Wait, Beaudry. Now, I'll testify at your trial, and I promise you it'll be a fair one, but that's all. Now, give me the gun.
You don't make it easy, Marshal.
My job's to bring you in. Any way I can get you there.
Dead or alive, huh?
That's right.
Here's the gun.
Thank you. The next day, I turned Chess Rhine over to the Army at Fort Donner. The colonel wanted credit for sending him back to California, and I wanted to be rid of him. Took us 3 days to ride back to Dodge. On the way, we got to be real good friends with Joe Beaudry. I wouldn't let him have his gun back. But even so, he managed to supply us with antelope steaks every morning. I made him borrow Chester's gun.
Gunsmoke, transcribed under the direction of Norman McDonald, stars William Conrad as Matt Dillon, U.S. Marshal. Tonight's story was specially written for Gunsmoke by John Meston, with music composed and conducted by Rex Corey. Featured in the cast were Lawrence Dobkin and Lou Krugman, with Vic Perrin, Junius Matthews, Jim Nusser, and Ralph Moody. Parley Bayer is Chester. Gunsmoke is heard by our troops overseas through the facilities of the Armed Forces Radio Service.
Okay, we heard Gunsmoke. That was titled Overland Express, with an original air date of the 31st of October, 1952, starring William Conrad. He starred in one of the Jack Webb dramas that I played. I believe it was Jack Regan. I forget what his character was titled. But anyway, my name is Arthur, and you've been listening to The Grand Hour here on 91.5 FM and or WMFO.org, Medford, Tufts Freeform Radio. Next week, I'll probably come back with something from Bob Bailey. I'm not exactly certain what at this point, but until then, thanks for listening.
Never told me that you failed.